Welcome to the Top Podcast. I'm your host, Richard Walsh, best-selling author of Escape the Owner Prison, The Contractor's New Way to Scale, Regain Control, and Fast-Track Growth While Loving Life. Today's guest, Joe Crisara. Now, Joe, I love this title, America's Service Sales Coach. All right, now, Joe is just not your average guy, okay? He serves over 6,000 salespeople, okay? This is the man here, okay? Now, Joe does transformation, not just information. I love that, too. All right, so no further ado, I'm bringing Joe on. We're going to get into his story. Joe, how are we doing today?
Well, I'm doing great. First of all, Richard, just thank you so much for inviting me to be on here. I definitely have seen so many of your episodes. I definitely have listened to so many of your episodes and definitely have seen your success, and it makes me feel good to be with somebody like you who's helping people just like I tried to do.
Awesome, man. Yeah, it's good to be in light company, right? Yeah. that's why this next hour is going to be a blast.
It is. We're going to have fun.
We're going to share some stories, and we're going to help some people out with this too. So let's bring everyone up to speed from where you're coming from, how you got this great title, and kind of just fill us in.
Well, you know, when I first started out, I went into business because I ran out of people to work for in a way. So I was a technician in the HVAC business who was suffering from an entrepreneurial seizure. And I went into business for myself. And I thought that, you know, well, what's the big deal? You go out there, you put some, why not go door to door and put out flyers on people's doors in a neighborhood, and hopefully people will call me. I had friends and family use me. And then I came to the realization that business is a lot more complex than just what I thought it was. That was like a lemonade stand. It turns out it was like more like running a major network or something like that, like a major part of the something like that. It was more complex, right? And so one of the things I realized is that I had no idea about the science of pricing or the science of service and everything like that. So I just used what was in my heart, right? And then as a result, I wound up in the first 7 years in business, I worked hard as I could, 12, 15 hours a day. But I wound up being about $250,000 in debt. And I was the opposite of escaping the owner's prison. I was in complete prison, debtor's prison and the owner's prison. I had to do all the work myself. I was in the field, I was scrambling. And I had one of my customers told me, he goes, you know, Joe, one thing I noticed about you, I told him I was going through, I was honest with my customer. He said, you know, I see you're always trying to save people money and stuff. You're always trying to save people things. He goes, why don't you stop trying to save people money and just trying to offer them the better service and better warranties and better quality and things like that? Why don't you do that? And I said, oh, people don't want to spend the money. I told the guy's name was Dave, right? And it turned out that he showed me the science of how to do pricing. And in an hour at the coffee table, he showed me how to do like to make premium mid-range economy options. Every time you show somebody a price, you should be showing them a premium mid-range economy price. Make sure the prices are customized and relevant to your client, so the customer doesn't feel like you're using a flat rate book or something like that, like you're making it for them. He goes, and then just at the end of it, just say, what should we do? Here's the prices. What should we do? With that has been the core of our training, right? Which is what I teach today is to, I think there's nothing more important than what I teach, because and what I not only teach, but what we do for people, which is to create revenue from a normal opportunity. Because if you can't create revenue and make profit, you can't serve your employees, you can't serve your customers, you can't serve your own family. And so it literally, what Dave told me that day transformed my life. I was smart enough to listen to it, probably because I was desperate. $250,000 in debt within 2 years, and that was in December. It was in January of 1991. By December of 1994, I was debt free. That's how powerful the information was. And from that point forward, we went on to do a 24% net profit company, and I made myself a suitable salary for an executive plus somebody who does the work in the business. That on top of that profit. And went on to teach everything I learned during that turnaround phase, and also in the success phase. And I found that, you know, it takes courage to make profit and takes courage to do the right thing. There's some people in the organization you may have that may not get there with you. You have to be able to master the art of abandonment with people who are dragging you down. and be able to do things that are right that wind up giving you traction to move forward. And so I learned how to design my business, how to I was an eMyth mastery program coach and things like that back in the day. And there's not a part of the business I don't have an answer to now. You know, and within 7 minutes, I'll give you an answer to any problem. That's how I feel now about it. So, but it was only because of those scars, you know, Richard, that doing it wrong gave me the superpower of knowing how to do it right in a way. Does that make sense?
Yeah, Joe, that's it's a common theme. Okay. And it is a critical element to success is your failures, your missteps, your mistakes, however you want to sum them up, whatever you want to call them. You know, people like you and I, and a lot of the people I deal with, you know, failures are just learning lessons. Okay. It's the quitting that drives me crazy, right? You can fail, but you don't quit, right? You persist. You turned your business around in 2 years because of some quality advice.
You know what's even more of a tragedy is the people who fail, but continue to try to make something to keep failing routinely, and they're just stuck there. They're not failing bad enough to go out of business, because actually it would be a favor to them if they failed so bad where they'd have to quit, because then they could just start over and do it again, like kind of where I was, right? Because that's the thing that was a blessing, was being that far in debt. I had to listen. I was like, what am I going to do? Not listen to somebody who's trying to tell me something? You know, it's the people, like before I got into debt, you know, it was a lot of things that happened. A couple of people didn't pay me, big jobs I had. I went through a divorce with my wife, who had a bipolar disorder, and it was a lot of different stuff going on there that sucked money out of our revenue and things like that. So it's no surprise as to why I got into debt. But you know, I was living a life where it was mediocre was good enough in a way. And you know, if you lead a life where mediocre is good enough, that's the dangerous spot, right? Because you think that I could just keep doing this for years, and the answer is no, you can't. Because there's things that are going to happen in your life, which are yet to come, which are going to be tragedies and pitfalls you don't even know about. And if you're just doing mediocre, it's not enough to get through those different challenges. You're going to need to do better, so that when you do have challenges, you have a buffer to be able to support yourself and your family and your customers. Does that make sense, Rich? I think it's not just a failure, but it's a mediocrity is actually worse than failure, I think.
Yeah, that's actually a great... a great explanation. I am not a fan of mediocrity. Okay. Be a complete bust out or be a high achiever. You know, do not be, do not be in the middle. Don't just get by. Okay. Cause that, like you said, and everything you just said is totally accurate. I was talking the other day, I was on a guest on a podcast, and we were talking about the political cycles and COVID and how do you prepare for this? You know, what were some of my big mistakes early on? I said, well, there's no preparation. You know, there's a change of the guard one way or another every 4 years, every 2 years, you know, that way there's always, everything's affected. You know, you have to plan for good and bad, right? Mm-hmm. So you have to prepare for those situations. You don't have control over those situations, but you have control over your business, right? And yeah, if you're a high achiever, okay, that should be in your wheelhouse. That should be a focus. Like, I need to be prepared for this. I need to be able to weather a 2 month, 3 month, 8 month, 9 month, you know, whatever it is. I need mm-hmm. to be able to weather that. And what are some of the strategies? It reminds me of the war room. Okay, you actually get in a war room, and our military runs scenarios constantly, right? Worst mm-hmm. case, this, we get attacked on two fronts, three fronts. They're preparing for all this stuff. Your business should be the same.
I agree with you. You know, there was a time when I was doing badly, when I was in debt, I would use everything as an excuse. I'd use, you know, this is back in the 90s, right? You know, Clinton. Ever since he got in office, I can't do anything. Or my ex-wife. And I told Dave, the guy Dave, who's my customer, it's my ex-wife. She's bipolar. It's the economy. You know, it's the employees. You can't find good employees. And every excuse known to man. And then my customer, Dave, he said, Joe, I noticed that you're not mentioning one person who's involved with every problem you got. And I said, who do you mean? My wife's mother? he goes, no. There's one person who's involved with all your problems. You didn't mention them. It's you. You're not even looking at your actions. You're only worried about everything else that's going on around you. Why don't you... He goes, I can tell you this. He's a pharmaceutical salesperson. He's like, Listen, I've gone through negative things before, and I've been through two divorces, actually, not just one. Imagine that, he told me. He goes, but, you know, I realized that I learned from the first one about what to do with the second one and how to make that better, right? And he goes, now I made sure I found the right person. I don't have to get divorced. I found the right – I learned from there every time I got married, right? So I got – it's gotten better every time. It's like, so you got to do the same thing. You can't – and so, you know, went from that, Richard, to where I used to think, you know, I'd blame a snowstorm for not having good, do good in business or whatever, to say, like, now I'm like, when the pandemic hit, it was like, I hate to say this, but I was almost like, oh, good. Because I know there's two things that are going to happen, Richard. There's going to be some people who are going to do better because of this pandemic, and some people are going to quit and pack it in, and they're not going to do good. And I'm going to be like, which group do I want to be in? And I just know that. So I look at adversity like that, or anything that's global adversity, and there's a lot of people out there who are in the blue collar trades who are really concerned about the election, because, you know, now they have a liberal candidate is in, you know, okay, place there, and they think, oh, that's going to kill our business. But listen, the biggest enemy you got is not the liberals, it's yourself. Look in the mirror, and you're the one who's liberal supporting employees who aren't productive. You know the biggest liberal you got is yourself, not Joe Biden, it's you, because you're probably supporting employees who aren't producing anything, and yet they're still getting the paycheck every week. You know, that's something you got to design your business so that the business supports itself, and that you can't enable your business by continuing to make payroll when you're not getting the production that you seek. Does that make sense, Richard?
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. You know, it's a very good point. You have to function regardless of who's in office, right? It's business, and it's up to you. And like you said, there's advantages. Yeah, you see COVID coming down the pike. Again, if you're prepared, you don't know what it's going to be, but you're prepared for it, right? Now, like you're saying, who do I want to be? When you're the positive guy, you're going to take advantage of it. What are you looking for? I'm going to buy stuff for 10 and 20 cents on the dollar. Okay, I'm going to grab some market share right now. There's going to be guys folding because of this. I'm going to suck up that market share for pennies on the dollar. I'm going to grow and expand my business during this time. You know, that's the thing, because the guys who aren't prepared, they're not going to weather a month of bad times, 2 months, 3 months. They're never going to get past the 3 month mark, right? Because they haven't built their business, like you said, to be sustainable, self-sustainable, and to be to work and be on a growth track. Right, to really understand where they're going with, regardless of the external effects, right? That stuff you can manage, just like weather in a storm. It's turning the ship into the wind or into the wave or whatever it's going to be. You've got to be able to do that. That's what a captain does, right? Exactly. So that's kind of what you're saying. That's, you have to be prepared for that stuff.
I think it's, it's like when you're accepting, what's good enough, sometimes that's the enemy, right? That mediocrity thing. I think that we normalize poor performance into what we think is called mediocrity. And that's why I see so many businesses that we help. You know, like looking at our business, we were doing, Zoom training since 2007. We were doing online learning and coaching, and we train, coach, and hold people accountable. That's what the business I do for service businesses, right? And we help SIS create systems that are sustainable and scalable. And, we already had a good client base and we're doing pretty good. But when this thing hit with the pandemic, then all of a sudden our business became extremely relevant, because now it's like nobody can meet live. Who does online training? And here we were. And we grew this year by over 150%. We had, had now three times more clients than we had before. This year started. So we would have thought, and believe me, I was the same thing. Like, maybe we should think about who we're going to lay off or whatnot. And I went, for a moment, I had that thought, and I'm like, wait a second, what am I thinking that way for? I gotta, you know, we have to coach ourselves. Sometimes we have to be our own coach, Richard. Does that make sense?
Yeah. I mean, you go from thinking to lay off to having to go on a hiring binge, you know,
right? Right. You think a layoff is tough, trying to find right. somebody to hire. That's even harder.
Yeah. And it goes to that point, what you're saying about the employees, whether being non-productive or not. It's what I found too. A lot of guys, they have these lowered expectations of people. There, you know, you hear there's no good people out there to work. There's none of these kids want to work. You hear it all, right? All excuses. Yeah. I said, it's nonsense. You bring in the people and you have a training program, that can elevate them and they can be part of a team, have them contribute. It's not who's out there. Okay. Mm-hmm. Cause there's a ton of good people who are out there, but they have to be attracted to what you're offering. Yeah. You know, they, if you're going to come and they're going to get like treated like the dirt they're sweeping off the floor. Well, hey, okay. They're not staying. They're not putting out, they're not going to give you the extra. Right. So you got to develop an attractive, you know, company culture, but an attractive process, like you're saying, if you've created, and I always tell you, if you create the hiring process, again, it's duplicatable, it's systematized. They understand their job expectations. They understand their boundaries. You give them all this stuff so that they really understand what's expected of them. So many guys throw them on a job site, give them a hammer and tell them to get to work. Yep, all right. Well, yep. they have no boundaries. They're clueless. Yeah, and the first time they get yelled at, they're like, well, no one told me.
Yeah. I call that free ranging, right? You just, it's like hiring a chicken and let them free range.
See if it's good for chickens, but not for employees.
It may be good for chickens, but even a chicken should have a pen or at least a boundary. Right? Even if they're free ranging.
I have 30 chickens. I have 30 chickens and I built a magnificent coop for them. If I ever get tired of them, it's going to be a guest house for my friends.
Isn't it funny how every night they go back in they're trained that every night they got to go back in the coop so we're safe.
That's right. And, get on that perch, baby.
They get their back. It's funny, isn't it? I had chickens too for a while, and it is funny. But it's like when it comes to employees, like I agree with you that the, the onboarding and orientation of everybody. So even if you got an experienced person, it doesn't mean they're a finished product. They have to learn the way that you're doing things. And throwing them in a truck with some other guy who's unhappy to begin with is probably not going to be, even if somebody's happy, but they're incompetent, probably not good either. But, there's no expectation. I always look at this. Onboarding and training, the biggest element of it is graduation, that you put somebody on an orientation program for your company for, let's say, 3 weeks before you get your own truck for, a service guy or whatever for HVAC or plumbing or electrical company or whatnot. You say, well, you get a truck once we know that you know how to do all the paperwork, once you know how to use our software, once you know how to do our job processes the right way. And we're going to do a orientation that's going to do that. Now, you're going to have to prove and test that you prove that. That's the biggest element. I think a lot of people do have what we're talking about. They think they teach or orient people, but they never truly test them to make sure that they now can pass that test. And, that should be a moment of victory where the new employee spends 3 weeks on orientation. And then in front of the rest of the other employees, they can show how proficient they are at what they learned. And so everybody can get up and give them a standing ovation where everybody can give them a high five and maybe even give them a certificate. But I think a lot of times people do this so much training. And I think we all know that training is instinctively, I think any company that's forward thinking knows that we have to train our people. And I was, even when I was losing money, I was training people. I had, we were like the Refrigeration Service Engineer Society Contractor of the Year in the Chicago area, 1992. We were one of the best training companies, but we never, and that's the only thing we did graduate people was when that training, because we had that organization we belonged to that made us pass the test. And I realized I need to do for my other stuff, my communication training or my training, I got to keep a truck clean. The guy has to pass the test and show us he can do it. I think the testing is part of the thing that is missing a lot. Where people do orientation or training, but they don't naturally set a bar and say, hey, okay, you've been trained, pass the exam in a way. You know what I'm saying there, Richard?
Yeah, that is very well put. And I equate that also exactly all that. Like, I love the testing aspect, right? That's brilliant, should be there, gotta be there. But here's the other thing. What you're doing for the employee, you're doing a couple of things. You're causing them to earn the job, right? You're not just hiring them because you desperately need people. I can get that on the corner of Home Depot, right? I can get guys jumping in the back of the truck. But now they've had to put some serious time and effort into a job. Yes, they're getting paid for it. And then, like you said, they get the standing ovation, they get clapped. Now you're part of the team. You're in. It's like boot camp, right? I go to the Corps. I went to the Marine Corps. I got 12 weeks. I get out. I'm a nothing for 12 weeks. And then all of a sudden I'm in the Brotherhood. Right, I got that graduation. I'm now I'm part of an elite group, and then the training continues from there. Just like the hiring process, you can't just say, hey, it sounds good, show up tomorrow morning with your boots and a lunch, we'll get to work. Okay, mm-hmm. that doesn't, you're not boding a lot of confidence in a guy's like, man, these guys are desperate. He didn't even ask me for what I've been doing, but a lot of guys hire that way. So when you have a good hiring process as well, where it's not just one call and you're hired, they understand they got to work for the job, right? They got to work to get the job, And then when they're in the job, they then work and they understand that they can scale in this job. Their skills can increase, their money can increase. And then you have a path for them. Say, look, you might be starting at $23 an hour, but hey, at this level, you want to test out, you'll be at 26. At this level, you can be 29 and whatever the numbers are, right? But you give them like a path, like, but it'll take you 4 months to be here, 6 months to be here. So look, in a year's time, you can be making $8 more an hour or whatever it is. You know, and right. It gives them a lot of confidence and reason to stay and perform well on a continuing basis.
You know, that does bring up a thing, you know, to have a kind of a career path for everybody to say, you know, at my company, we had, when I ran a heating and air conditioning and plumbing company, and, you know, from 1985 through 2001, I realized that there's a cycle of employeeship. Some people were destined to be like installers, then service, then sales, then maybe a manager for our company, right? And there's other people who are like, you know what? I got to realize that maybe the future of this person may be somewhere else. Maybe they may have higher expectations than where we are at, you know? And I realized that there's a cycle. If I looked at it like, if I could get 7 years cycle out of somebody and then see where they're at there, they might want to stay with us. They may want to go on to something better. We had a lot of people who graduated from our company and went on to work at building department of like the College of Lake County or at Motorola or places like that, where they got much better jobs than I could offer, actually, you know. So I think it's like, you got to look at, you're really in the people development business, you know, and that's really every business is like a university, to teach, train, orient. And then, you know, when you're on the job, you're learning too, right? I believe in the system of management where you give somebody something to do, you inspect what you expect to make sure it got done, and then you give them the next thing to do. You don't give people multiple things to do, because if you do, then it's their discretion. They're free ranging again. So you say, hey, go on this opportunity, talk to this customer, give them some prices or whatnot. And then at the end of it, you know, let's get the work done. Let's get that scheduled. So I really believe in that. You tell people, you train them what to do, but then accountability is another piece that's, I think a graduation is a piece that's we fall short. I think accountability is a piece that people fall short. They let people do the wrong thing routinely, and then they throw up their arms and say, what can you do about that? And I say, well, you can just not give them another job to do unless they did the last one right. Does that make sense, Richard?
Right. It's, you know, accountability is for every person in the company, including us, right? I mean, it's, we all need accountability. That's really important. You know, it's funny.
Yeah, I think your motivation is important too, right? I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off. Go ahead,
no,
Richard.
No, it's okay. I was going to say, I don't know if you've worked with, you know, Orkin, the pest control, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
They've got a very interesting system, talking about what you just were on. You take like a personality, a really unique, like, I don't know, it's 100 some questions, 150 question, basically a little questionnaire you go through to determine what position are you going to be in. Are you going to be an applicator? You know, are you going to be a management, you know, and they, what the guy told me was, it changed everything by doing that, because you're doing, and it repeats a lot of the questions, right? To see how you answer the sheet full, and you go to the next one, then you see a lot of the same ones and you see if you answer, but then it tabulates this and they find like, well, look, you're looking for a management position, but you're really going to be better suited for a technician. Right. And they found that it's unbelievably accurate. It saved them over 50% on turnover. Because they weren't getting guys who are like, yeah, they're good for 2 months and then they kind of, you know, they fizz out or whatever. But so that goes to your point about they're really helping you not get put in a position you're going to hate. Okay. Yeah, you're not going to be, you're not going to be adept at, right? You're not going to be able to do well in this. And they're straight up honest about it. He goes, I hate that, you know, they'll tell the guy and they'll do it. You know, they'll tell, this is not going to be for you. And our policy is, and once they stuck to that policy, again, accountability, that everything changed for them. They started getting unbelievable retention, getting the right people. So very exactly along what you're saying. I love it.
Well, you know what it is? It's something, I think it's like, you know, if you ever see like even a dog, one of the books, I have a book called The Whisper Sales Management. And the book talks about how I watched Cesar Millan, the dog whisperer, and how happy a dog is when he has discipline from his owner. The owner takes him for a walk. They walk a certain way, the same time every time. They expect him to go to the back. You know, the dog is happiest when they know what they're supposed to do, when they're engaged with their owner. you know, it's the animals that are unhappy, and even our own, I wouldn't call our employees animals, but, you know, all of us are animals in some way, that we're unhappy when we're not engaged with our leader. You know what I'm saying? And so I think that's the same thing. A dog that's toxic is one that doesn't know what to do, and it's doesn't know its role, doesn't know if they're inside, outside, supposed to sit here next to you, or what's my role here today, you know, for you. I think the same thing, we have to say, what's our employee? If we engage our employee and get and kind of help them say that we're interested in you enough to find a great role for you here or somewhere else, whatever's better for you, that's something that's equity that people can take with them. And it makes it hard to leave a job when your company's engaged with you at that level, I feel.
Yeah, it's the same. Like, I have six kids, right? The only way to control that, okay, and they're all within 3 years of each other, is boundaries, right? We give them expectations. No, you can't do this. You can't go here. You can't do that. That's when kids thrive. And I'm not, again, like, we're not comparing animals to people, but people are people, okay? When you give them the boundaries, when you give them clear expectations, and then you give them the ability to thrive in that environment, okay, they'll do well. Okay, as entrepreneurs, we got to go home. We never stop thinking about the business. They want to clock out, and believe me, most of them don't think about the business. Okay, they go home and they're done. They're going to see their family. They're going to go to sleep, and they'll come back the next day, which is good. That's what you want, right? I want the guy who's focused on his gig all day, doing the best that he can do, being excellent, and then literally clock out. Hey, man, see you tomorrow. You know, right, I'm not calling them, I'm not sending them an email, I'm not bothering the guy. I haven't built a company that relies on me sending an email at 10 o'clock at night to one of my foremen.
Yeah, yeah. Right? You know, I think that's important. I think that's good to get people their own autonomous time and things like that. But, you know, here's what I tried to do. I tried to make sure I built my business so that people thought of it when they weren't working as something they couldn't wait to get back to. Right. That's the thing was, it wasn't just about, like, I didn't expect you to work when you're not on my time, right? When you're on your time. But it's nice when people said, I thought about something you said to me last night at work today, and it was keeping me up all night. That's a good sign, right? That they're like, yeah, it really made me feel good when you said this to me about that I have possibilities here at this place. You know, when they're thinking about you and your company positively during their off time, that's a good place to be, I think, you know, that this way you're not having to check on morale. Morale is kind of taking place of its own. But I think that's something that the culture you create, you know, I think that's some people think that if you have too much discipline, employees are not going to respond well to it. The truth is, companies who are undisciplined, where the owner doesn't check in with people and doesn't have a systematic way of checking in with the quality of the performance that they do. If nobody's checking on my performance, and they don't care about it, and they don't care about it, it's hard to work at a place where people just don't care. You know what I'm saying? That's why I feel apathy is the hardest place to work.
Right. Because you're going to get those bad apples that are going to do the bare minimum. Mm-hmm. Right. And you get one or two of those people. Okay. They are a drop of poison in a glass of water. Right. No one's going to drink it. Right. No one's going to drink that glass. Where they're going to see it in exactly. There. They're not going to drink it. So you got to get rid of those people. Like you say, you build that culture where you're exactly right. Good thoughts about coming in tomorrow. They show up on time. They get there early. You know, they're putting in a great day. They're clocking out. They feel accomplished. You know, you're getting the appreciation. It's a big package, right, Joe? You're talking about, it's so easy to say company culture. It's a great little buzzword. You know, everyone's talking now because I know this from doing all these podcasts. Okay. Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's cool, but what does that really mean?
Let me give you an example. When I was in my first part of my career from 85 to 92, right, 7 years into it, when somebody wanted to quit my company during those first 7 years, and they'd say, yeah, I'm going to join somewhere else and I'm going to leave. And I'm just going to give you my 2 weeks notice, they told me. And I said at the time, here's how I was rough around the edges, right? I'm like, well, you don't have to give me the 2 weeks. You can just leave right now. You're fired. I let them go. So I let them go when they gave me the 2 week notice like that, right? And I realized that I wasn't creating a lot of goodwill with the other employees by doing that. They're like, oh, geez, he's the kind of guy where you give him a notice, he just fires you, right? So you better be ready to go when you tell him you give him a notice.
There's no change in your mind, right? Exactly. So you can't have second thoughts.
That's how I was, right? And I was like, so I said, what's the opposite of doing that? What's the opposite of saying, I don't care about you, just get out of here? The opposite, I said, I'm going to do the opposite instead of doing it that way. Instead of next time somebody tells me they want to leave and quit, I'm going to throw a celebration and a bon voyage party. and see what that does. And so I had this guy named Bill who he started him out as a, you know, apprentice, and he became an expert tech in about 5 years. And he said, I'm going to go on to a different company, not too far from here. I got a job that pays more, or I like the opportunity. It's close to my house or whatnot. And I'm like, okay, well, Bill, he goes, so I'm going to give him my 2 weeks notice. He goes, I know you're probably just going to fire me, but I'm going to give you 2 week notice anyway. And I said, well, Bill, no, I'm not going to fire you. I said, I learned a lot from over the years. I said, you know what? You've given me 5 years of service, and I want to say thank you for that. I said, matter of fact, I'll accept your 2 week notice, and I want you to stay here for 2 weeks. And I said, I got something special for you at the end of 2 weeks. So if you stay here for 2 weeks, I got a special bonus for you in 2 weeks. Really? What is it? I said, you're going to like it, Bill. So just to hang in there for 2 weeks. So he goes, okay, I can hardly wait. So just that alone, right? And he's like, so I told the other employees, I said, when Bill's going to leave, and I turned it into a positive. Hey, Bill's got another job. Isn't that great? And I was, instead of saying it sucks that Bill's leaving, I said, it's great that Bill's leaving. He found something better, right? And then I said, we're going to have a bon voyage party for Bill 2 weeks from now. So I had Jenny, my dispatcher, and Don. I said, yeah, let's go ahead and make a bon voyage. Let's have pizza. We'll have some pop, and we'll say bon voyage, and we'll get big. I had like 17 people at that. Yeah, let's go ahead and tell them goodbye and give them a big hug. And they're like, okay, that's great. They were shocked, right? But they did it anyway. So on Friday, 2 weeks after his gave me the notice, he comes. I said, Bill, come to the warehouse. We have something we want to go over with you. Here's your surprise. And he goes into the warehouse, and everybody yells, surprise, and bon voyage party. And we had music playing. We had banners. Good luck, Bill, with your all that kind of stuff. And he started crying, this guy, right? He was a full grown man, started crying like, oh, I can't believe you guys. And everybody got to give him hugs. We had pizza. We drank some pop and all that kind of stuff. And at the end of the whole party, he cleared out. And he, guess what happened? You can probably guess the end of this, right, Rich?
What happened?
Yeah, he calls. He goes, man, I know you threw the party for me and everything like that. I didn't expect that. That is a bonus. That's amazing. He goes, would it be okay if I could stay here? Is it? He said, yes, it was possible to stay. I was like, well, yeah, you could stay if you want. I said, you know, yeah, we just had, there's nothing wrong with having a pizza party. It's fine if you stay, you know. So you wound up staying, and you wound up staying all the way to the end when I sold the business, you know. And wow. And then, of course, every employee then at that point, you can see the difference in morale just change. And this is a good example. It's like, what do you do about guys who come in late? What do you do about your bad morale? Well, it's what you do that creates it. The leader is the one that kind of shapes that culture. So it's not that story, I think, just shows that sometimes we're our biggest enemy when it comes to that, you know?
Yeah, we were very similar back in the day. I was like that too. I wasn't too I was rough around the edges to be gentle about my personality. But, you know, the important thing, like you're saying also, even if he left, you know what you did? You left an open door for the guy.
Right.
Because, you know, the grass is always greener, right, till you get there.
Right.
And you find the dogs going a lot. All of a sudden, you find a lot of dog mess. Okay, in the yard, you don't look so green, you know, but the grass was just tall enough to cover it up, right? So those guys might want to go, I made a mistake, because I had that with a crew, and they came back a season later, can we please have our job back, you know, because I had a bad project manager, and it was ended up being one of my employees that caused this whole thing, a project manager.
Go ahead.
No, I just said, I got rid of him. I realized he was the issue, because I had a crew for 10 years, and they left. Okay, now, if some red flag isn't going up on that, okay, there's an issue. And I was a little too blind, a little too busy
to
see what was going on. And thankfully, they came back. And the best part of the story was they went to work for another company that did custom water features, that also did water features. And I asked, well, how was that? They go, it was the worst thing ever. Homeowners screaming at us because nothing's done right. The guy didn't care. Nothing was level. He goes, it was because I was the best, right? I mean, I taught him. 100%. So okay, these guys are never leaving now because they know what's out there, right? So yeah, so it ended up working out in the end, but it was a rough season.
It was a rough season. What I did after that, then what I did from that point is I said, well, that worked so well, I'm going to go back and find some of the ex-employees that left us and see how they're doing. And I said, I had a guy named Eric who went to work at the building department of the College of Lake County in Illinois, in Northern Illinois. And he,
I almost went to that college.
Oh, you did? Are you from that? Where are you from?
I was born in Waukegan. I grew up on the North Shore. I grew up on
North
Shore.
I didn't know you were a homie.
Yeah. And I'm right across the state line now. You know, I'm right here.
This is over. Our business is to be over in Gray's Lake and Gages Lake, Illinois.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. My uncle lives right on Gages Lake.
It's funny. Oh, good. Cool. Yeah. So I had this guy named Eric. So I said to Eric, Eric, you know, we're celebrating some of the ex-employees' achievements here. So I was going to put you in our, what called our Wall of Fame, because you graduate and you become the manager of the whole building department at CLC. I said, would you, can I come in and have you take a picture? And we'd like to do a ceremony to celebrate that you have this position. And he's like, what? I'm like, yeah, we're doing this thing with ex-employees to make sure that we can realize how honored we were to have you. And they kind of went back and backtracked that. And I had this wall of fame of people who used to work with us and some of the stuff they went on to, like Jim, a guy named Jim was the manager at building department, HVAC department at Motorola down there in Libertyville and things like that. So we had this, you know, 12 people that we had on the wall that we honored them. And believe me, that then some of those guys came back. You know what? I'm looking for a job as a manager. Would you want to? And all of a sudden, some of our managers became some of those ex-employees. So I think that's like, you know, when people say that you can't control some of that stuff, I think there's a lot more we can control that's pretty magic if we just start to, and you mentioned before, Richard, that be positive. It's hard to be positive in the face of negativity. But sometimes it's a self-inflicted wound. We create our own negativity, I feel, you know?
Right. I want to just say it's pretty genius what you did there. You know, by taking it, because that's really cool, because you put that wall up with those guys and now they're here. They're here. They're running this. Everyone's like, man, they actually like care about people. You know what right. I mean? They're like, this literally can be, they also don't feel like they're stuck in a place forever.
Yeah.
Which is, doesn't mean they have to leave. But they know that if they do, they're not going to be hated.
Exactly.
They're not going to become the enemy.
Yeah.
So many people leave and they become the enemy. They feel like, oh, yeah, I'm going to go work for someone else. So what? Right.
Yeah, I think it's a natural part of people development that we have to accept that it's not that. And so if you have somebody leave, why not make them an ambassador when they leave? That's what came out of it, which is all my ex-employees then became more employee and more ambassadors for my company. And that's when things really took off after that. That's when we really got the biggest.
That's so good, because what are they going to do? Right. You don't think they're ever going to meet another guy who is maybe coming up in the trades in HVAC and they looking for a job. Guess where they're going to tell them to go?
Oh yeah. Yeah,
to exactly. You. Right. Like, man, you got to start here, man. This is a great company. What a great, that's where I started. Now look at me. Exactly. You know what I mean? They're like, wow. I mean, that I'm telling you, that's really smart, Joe, that I really love that. I never even thought of that. Okay. Oh, that is, I'm going to put that down. That's going in the academy.
That's one for me.
That's right. One for you. I want to give you credit in the academy for that, you know,
Oh my goodness.
But it's awesome. That really is. That's a big takeaway. I hope people kind of realize what you just said and how big of, that's a little epiphany right there, you know, that they really should think about that when, and I mean that in the way of how we talk about their employees, how we treat our team members, you know, because I'm always talking about building the team. I've even tried to stop using the word employee, you know what I mean? Like, you got to build this. Everyone's got to be working towards the same goal, being appreciated. There's so many things too. When we talk about this whole company culture thing, like you said, that you created a real company culture. That was really, that's impressive.
Well, you know, it's like this. I think that my philosophy now is that, like, look, listen, we never met before this interview. You know, you and I don't know each other. And here's what I look at it. I look at it going into this interview. Here's a secret you should know, Richard, is that you probably don't realize it, but I'm going to tell you right now. Here's something I want you to know, that I give you my unconditional friendship no matter what the rest of your life. You've got my friendship. Even if you don't like me in the future, I'm still your friend. I still give that to you. That's my philosophy. My philosophy is I give my unconditional friendship and support to everybody I meet, even if they don't like me. Because I always feel this. I feel like, you know what? If I give that support unconditionally to everybody and try to say, I'm going to focus on what's good about people and the good things we have received from the gift that we have, the people who are in my life, that it's going to draw more good people toward me. And that's how the universe found you and I together, probably, right? I mean, here you are, practically a neighbor. I live in Los Angeles now. When you live in Beloit, I think I saw you. Right. Some bio. You know, so we moved away from the area, but it's funny how sometimes, you know, like-minded people attract each other and find each other. And just like I said, I always say this, that I saw everybody, my employees, even my ex-wife, right? I give her my unconditional friendship and support. You know, even if they're mad at me or don't like me, I'm like, that's okay, because I'm not here to be judged by other people. I'm here to say, I judge myself. I look in the mirror, and if I feel good about that, I think that makes other people feel good about me too. That's just how I feel the universe is wired, you know?
Yeah, that's an incredibly healthy attitude, right? That's what that is, you know, because you control you. You don't control whether I like you or not.
Right.
Right. Exactly. I mean, I could not like you for one of the dumbest reasons ever that you're totally unaware of, and I'm sitting here stewing, but you have a great day every day, regardless of, you know, what I'm mad about. You know what I mean? So I try to, I do something similar with that too. I try to bring my best. That's why, because I get a lot of coaches on my podcast, right? Because there's a lot of people need help, right? My ultimate mission, help 10,000 business owners escape the owner prison. Well, that's only 10,000. Okay, I can't get everybody, right? And it's going to take a while to get 10,000. But I want to bring your knowledge. I want to bring your experience, his experience, because everyone's bringing such great things to the table. It's kind of my mastermind philosophy, right? That's what we do. You get the greats in a room and everybody gets elevated. Everyone down below us, with us, who works, they all get to benefit from us sharing our knowledge with each other. So I'm not competitive that way where a while back I might have been. There would have been ego involved in this and everything else. And now I'm just, man, I just want to be around guys like you. I want a guy who just taught me what to do with my past employees. Okay. I can write that down. It's like the greatest thing ever.
Okay. Well, that's so nice of you to say that, Richard. Well, definitely. I feel fortunate to have people like you who are open. I call open hand philosophy, right? You're you bring people on, you open your hand, you know, and I think when we try to, whether it's employees or whether it's business from our customers, I think we try to own things too much. Then it kind of, we lose it. One of the analogies somebody said was, if you take a scoop of sand from a beach and you hold that scoop of sand in open hand, you have a big pile of sand and you can own that forever. You can hold it, right? But if you try to close your hand and own that sand, then all of it falls out and all you got left is about a quarter, size of a quarter left of sand, right? And you, by trying to create ownership of it, I could think the almost like the narcissism that everything's about me being successful type of thing. It's like, success doesn't begin with you. It begins about what service you provide for other people, whether it's your employees. You know, I think internal service with your employees is a great place to start. I think to me, you can't do great external service for your business if you are not serving your internal clients. If we're talking differently to our coworkers than we are to our customers, if we're not using that same elegance and grace and kindness, it shouldn't be two people answering that phone and somebody who's in the office. That same philosophy we treat our customers with should be treating our internal customers. I think that's what I learned over the years. That's one of the things that I hope, if you get one thing from this podcast, is that customer service starts by serving our internal people first, and then naturally we all would be kind and generous and helpful to our external clients as well.
Absolutely. You can't expect that, right? It all starts at the top, right? It starts with you. If you're the owner, you're going to say it's all there. And if you can't, like you said, because they're going to duplicate what's happening to them in the office inside before they get in the truck and go out to the job site, right? So if they're not leaving in that great state of mind, right, that they know that you got their back and you're appreciating these guys and everything else you've done, that's going to transfer over to the customers, like you said. There's another aspect of that too as a business owner. I always tell people, I said, if you don't, I'll take it to the family, right? So you got a family at home, a wife and kids. I go, who gets better attention, your customers or your family?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, if it's your customers, we're going to have to talk about that next. Okay, because you can't be doing that. And if your family is below your customers, we got issues. You know, so yeah, that changed my thinking in a big way too. A guy had said that to me once. I'm like, oh,
yeah,
I got some work to do. You know,
well, I mean, yeah. If you wouldn't start yelling at your customer, why would you yell at your son? Right. When he doesn't do his homework, you should, just like a customer, if you can't convince your customer to make a purchase from you, you do that by showing how much you care about your customer and how much you want your service to help them, right, to benefit them. The same thing with you as a parent. If you aren't telling your son or your daughter or your wife what you intend to do to benefit them before they ask you for it, don't expect to have a personal life that's going to be successful either, you know?
Right, exactly right. You know, it's important. You know what's interesting, Joe, as I talk to so many different people, coaches, entrepreneurs, things like that. You know, there's a lot of commonalities in this, right? Now, all of us have a little edge on each other in a different area, right? But again, that's what's so cool about this, because man, you can start to soften edges, round things up, you know, elevate your team because you're getting this wisdom from you, from me, from this person, and that's what makes the entrepreneurial journey so enjoyable.
Right.
Because you're open to the learning aspect, you know, because I know when I was about doing everything myself and I was the great artist, I'm the guy who installs it. I'm right. I'm the best. I'm the guy. I'm going to go pick up the check because it's my money. You know what I mean? So there's a big change in all that, which is great because you cannot operate, you cannot grow, you really can't even be happy. Okay. When you operate that way, you know, happiness gets sucked out of your life, you know? Mm-hmm. So it's important to understand, you know, what it takes to truly grow. But like you're saying, you have to have a foundational aspect inside your company. And I was speaking with some guys the other day talking about building to sell your business, that culture, like that you created at that business, you know, the wall of fame, the everything else, when a potential buyer comes in, okay, they can feel all that. They can see it. They can feel it because they're buying now that team.
Right.
And I tell people, you know, you can buy it, but they can all walk out of me tomorrow. Now I'm an owner with no people.
Yeah. It's something that I think when you see it, it's hard to explain it, but when you see it, you feel comfortable with it. Like I feel comfortable owning the place, something like this. I would feel really comfortable with it. Right. I think it's it kind of goes to what our instincts are really something that is a assimilation of all the things that make us feel like this is the right thing, whether it's when somebody buys from us or when somebody buys your business. You know, it's like they either feel like, yeah, I think I would really like owning something like that. And that's what happened when we sold our company. In 2001, I sold that company and it was a seamless. And the guy was like, man, this is going to help our culture. He had a plumbing company. Now it's one of the biggest plumbing companies in Chicago that bought my company, you know, and they're a huge conglomerate now that runs a company. But I think I feel good about the fact that the foundation of what we did helped that company achieve what they have this year, you know, to be one of the biggest companies in the whole Chicago area.
Yeah, it's amazing. You know, it's like you said, you don't understand. I don't think a lot of us underestimate the effect that we have as leaders. Okay. Your attitude towards that guy with the pizza party is a great example, right? Mm-hmm. You flipped that. You went from doing the wrong thing, you know, get out. You know, don't say now if you're in the banking industry, they walk you out anyways because they don't trust you at all.
Right, so,
you know, if you get noticed, it's like, I've got a security guard here, he'll take you to the door. Okay, grab your stuff.
Right.
You know, but a little different when you got the HVAC deal, right? we're not dealing with the world's secrets and their money, but usually. But it's so interesting that you've done that and then you create that, because if I'm coming in and I want to buy your company, I want to market sure I like what you built, but knowing that it's turnkey, I can walk in and like, just because you walked out the door and I walked in, everything's going to do the same.
Right.
You've
right.
built it where this thing is humming. Yeah, maybe I got some tweaks here and there. We're going to change a little branding or whatever, but not having the stress and the anxiety of having to like flip a company. Mm-hmm. No, when you're actually going, man, I should make mine a little more like this. That's a compliment.
Right.
Like you're saying, right. That's huge. I love that. That's awesome.
Well, great. Well, thanks for inviting me here today, Richard. I hope that we fulfilled all your, what your expectations were. I had a great time with you today too. And thank you for inviting me here, and definitely feel like I have a new friend. So thank you so much for that.
Cool. I love it. It's same back to you. So as I always do in the end, Joe, let's throw out some links. I'll put all these in the show notes too, so people can get, I want people to be able to follow you, get in contact with you. They may have a need for your service. I mean, you are the guy, you're America's service sales guy, right? So let's give them a chance to get a hold of you, follow you. So whatever you got, throw it out there. I know you're going to email me all this stuff anyways, but I'll put it in the show links, but let's give them
a little commercial.
There you go. Let's hear
commercial.
It.
All right. Let's well, good. Well, number one, we have three things we do. We have, we have live training we do for both management, office staff, and field staff. And I hold those meetings personally. We do it via Zoom right now, but we'll probably be resuming live in 2021 in spring. But we have live training. We also have coaching and training, which I do for, I become the sales or operation manager of your company pretty much. And I have e-learning that goes with that. So live training, my personal coaching and involvement, or e-learning that is a part of that involvement. And we can do it self-guided or when I guide it. So at contractorselling.com, you can go there. And if anybody here who listens to this podcast would like to get a free tour by me and even get a trial, I only give people trials if they're going to try the material though. So you have to be committed to going in, trying it and using it so you can be successful with it. If you do that, then we'll set up an appointment to see if you're interested in going forward. With that, we have, we definitely have the, you know, the best pro. I feel like we're the best when it comes to, not feel like we're the best, we have the best results. Our clients last year did over $4 billion in total sales and have grown by an average of, this year grew by average of 42% growth year over year, the coaching clients we have. So definitely, I feel there's nobody who does better at that than we do. And I would welcome anybody to take a tour of it, any business at all, which does any kind of service, blue collar services in particular. But Richard, again, thank you so much for your kind offer to have me on the interview. And also for anybody who wants to call me, you can call me at 877-764-6304, or you can email me at joe@contractorselling.com. That's joe@contractorselling.com. And we'll definitely be there for you.
I love it, Joe, man. You brought so much to the table today. All right. So I want to thank you, really, because this is, when I do a podcast, it's really about you. It's always about my guest. You know, I'm happy to facilitate a conversation, but man, I just love to lift you guys up. You're just doing such a killer job out there, and you're helping so many people, man. And that's what it's all about. That's what we're all here for. So thank you again. My pleasure. Thanks for taking out the time out of your busy schedule being on here, man. It's been a blast.
Thank you too, Richard. I had a lot of fun. Thank you.
All right, brother. Take care.
Thank you for listening to the ETOP podcast. Don't forget to subscribe. And if you liked what you've heard, please leave a great review for us. Your subscription and review helps us reach more people so we can show them how to escape the owner prison. Also, check out the links in the show notes about today's guests and more ways to connect with ETOP on social media. Stay strong and keep moving forward with your business.